All right. So, why we are talking about yields here? Why we are so thirsty for increasing yields in this world? Let's look at this from a perspective of food security, in the sense of an equation where you have cropland area and productivity per unit of land. And if we take a look of changes in cropland area during the last 50 years, what you will find is that right after the Green Revolution, or during the Green Revolution, the increase in cropland area globally was about 5 million hectares per year. So every year, another 5 million hectares of land were brought into production. Although much of these 5 million came from not from new land, but from intensification of rice systems or wheat systems in South Asia. During the 80s and the 90s, we went to a period of time in which there was pretty much no increase in cropland area. That means the net cropland area of the world remained pretty flat. However, in the last 10 years, we have seen an unprecedented increase in cropland area at a rate of 10 million hectares per year. And here we are not talking about more crops in the same piece of land per year. We are really talking about an important proportion of acres that were not under agriculture before, and they were brought into production. So, bottom line here is that now we are expanding cropland area more than ever in history. And you can see that in this figure, where the red trends shows the global cropland area for staple crops, which includes all major crops for human consumption. And then the yellow trend is only for the three major cereal crops that account for about 75% of the calories intake in the world. As I said before, there was some increase right after the Green Revolution. The cropland area remained flat during the 80s and the 90s. And then during the last decade, we have seen a very important expansion in cropland area at a rate of around 10 million hectares per year. And if you look carefully if you really look where this new cropland area is coming from, what we will find is about 70% is coming from South America, Asia, and Sub-Saharan Africa. So this is clearly telling us we are not producing enough food, and it's just pushing prices up and pushing cropland area expansions in places that should probably not be used for long-term sustainable agriculture. And again, the reason is we are not producing enough. So if you speak with people from FAO or from IFPRI, what they will tell you is that from now on till 2050, which is the year where the population peaks at 9.8 billion persons, we need to increase our average yields of our three major cereals by 1.2-1.3% per year. Now, how are we doing? If you look at the trends in crop yields from the 60s till now, but the first clear message is that those yields have increased in a linear fashion. That is, the annual increase in average corn, rice, and wheat yields have increased at the same rate in the 60s and now. But in terms of percentage increase, this means that by 1970, these rates of increase were equivalent to about 2% of the average yields by that time. But because those rates were the same, and now the yields are much higher, the same constant linear rate of increase, now it only represents 1.2% in the case of maize and rice, and only 0.9% in the case of wheat. So you can see that our rates of yield increase are on the edge, or already below the ones that should be achieved from now till 2050. And furthermore, if you are thinking that crop yields are going to increase after 2010, those percentage rates of increase are going to decrease. So, bottom line here, we are not our current rates of yield gains are not sufficient to cope with increasing demand for food, and that results in increasing expansion in cropland area at a rate that we have never seen in history. Now, we have that scenario. However, the literature, the scientific, the industry, the press is full of stories that are telling us that there is no problem about food security, because our yield gains are going to increase in the future at rates that we have never seen in the past. And in this, and as an example here, I'm showing the average U.S. maize yield from 1960 to 2010 using the historical data indicated with the yellow circles. And then you can see there all the projections that have been reported out there, in which out of the blue, these yield trends start to take an exponential shape, and they achieve, for example, 30 tons of maize per hectare by 2050. In some cases, it's funny because you can see that some of the early projections, they are already pretty off from the real trend. And these exponential trends of increase, they're really different from the one that will result if we just extrapolate the current yield gains into the future. So why these scenarios are so optimistic? What's behind this? And I will say that there are three major actors here, three major players that are behind these trends. One is the industry and the farm press that has flooded the press this last decade with news about super record yields that of course unverified, of for example 11 tons per hectare of soy, 29 tons per hectare of 11 tons of soy, 29 tons of corn, or 20 tons of rice. I'm not gonna argue the validity of these values, but for sure these are values that are not really useful for benchmarking current yields, and perhaps more important, they are not really useful when it's about trying to understand how future trajectories in yields are gonna look like. Distort our ability to allocate funds to what's really relevant. So, I guess that Chuck in the fairy tale, we all want to see these yields to occur one day in our producer's fields, but it may be a good idea to be a little bit more cautious about it. Then, on the other hand, we have some papers published in some very high-profile journals that proposed ways to improve yield potential through biotechnology. Now, a common feature of these papers is that they're talking about what they believe biotechnology can bring in terms of increasing yield potential, but they don't provide any sort of proof of concept on how biotechnology can increase yield potential. Biotechnology is very good at two things, at advertising and at increase the crop tolerance to abiotic factors like diseases, insects, waterlogging. But there is no proof out of there that biotechnology per se was able at all to increase yield potential of major crops. And now, let's put an economist there and in the cocktail, and then we have this other wave of papers, again published in very high-profile journals, in which these economists are telling us, well, you know, based on the expectations of the private sector, it seems like our rates of increase in yields are going to be fine in the future, and we will achieve food security with no problem. And the problem of this is that this really distorts and bias resource allocation, because somebody may read these papers and get the false impression that there is no problem out of there, and therefore it's not worth to invest in public research to increase yields. So three actors, industry, biotechnology, and economies, supporting these kinds of trends without any proof of concept. So to test if this is possible or not, we run a statistical analysis of yield trends for the three major crops, maize, rice, and wheat, which account for 85% of the global cereal consumption. And we run this for 36 countries that account for more than 80, 4% of rice production, 56% of wheat production, and maize, and 71% of maize production. And for these 36 country region cases, we apply a very robust statistical framework, and we test six models on their ability to reproduce the historical trend in yield. And we use models that were widely used by people in the literature to describe yield trends. And as you can see at the bottom of that chart, we also test the exponential model on its ability to portray yield trends. And we run this analysis for yield trends after the Green Revolution. That is from 1965 up to now. So what did we find? This figure shows the average rice yield over the last 50 years for some major producing countries or regions. And this is pretty much applicable to all the crops. First is that we haven't found any case where the exponential model gives us a better fit for the trend. In all cases, what we found is that the increase in yield has been linear over time. In some cases, that linear increase in yield was interrupted by a plateau in yield, which means that yield has not increased for many, many years. And that's the case, for example, of rice in California, where there was an increase up to the 90s, but afterwards that there was no increase in yields at all. In some other cases, like Vietnam in this example, where yields are very low at the beginning of the time series, there was a sort of plateau at the beginning, and then there was an increase in yields. But again, the increase in yield after that plateau was linear. So bottom line, no evidence of exponential rates of increase in yield, evidence of linear increase in yields in all cases, and evidence of yield plateaus for many crop regions that are very important in terms of accounting for global crop production. Same story for wheat. What we found was that there is a plateau in wheat average yield in North Europe during the last 20 years. In other cases, we haven't seen a plateau, but again, as you can see there, the rate of increase in yield has been linear, no evidence of exponential increase. How about corn? How about maize? Again, and despite many people try to convince us that now we are increasing corn yields at a higher rate than before, that's not true. In the U.S., we are increasing our corn average yield at the same rate as in the 60s. And perhaps more important, in some cases, in irrigated areas like Nebraska, what we are finding is that the average irrigated maize yield have not increased during the last decade. The same for Europe, and same for other cropping systems. In contrast, you can see that in low-input, low-yield systems like sub-Saharan Africa or India, the yields are pretty low and pretty flat. And it's probably there in those regions where the biggest opportunities for increased actual yields are. And now, if we try to condense all this analysis into a kind of a general message, what we found was that so this figure shows the global production that is accounted for the 36 region countries accounted for our analysis. And then you can see there, and then we have categorized those regions and countries according to the shape of the trend line. So you can see that there are countries with increasing rate of increase in yields, as it was the case of Vietnam for rice, cases where the yield or the rate of yield gain has remained linear, like corn in the U.S., or those cases where there was a decrease in the yield gain or evidence of a yield plateau. If you look at the total there, and if you look at those cases where there was decreasing rate or upper yield plateaus, you can see that there was 10% of cases where there was decreasing rate of yield gain and 21 cases where we found a yield plateau. Bottom line, in 31% of the countries that we consider in our analysis, we found that there was evidence of either yield plateaus or decreasing rates of yield gains. And in many of these cases, many of these cases corresponds to countries where yields are already pretty high and very near to the potential. So we want to propose the following hypothesis to interpret and to project yield trajectories into the future. We have a yield potential that is determined by weather and by the length of the growing season and by your crop sequence. And then we have farm yield, and we have a gap. If you're really close to the gap, like it is the case of rice in California or irrigated corn in Nebraska, well, the chances that you are going to be able to keep increasing yields at the same rate as in the past are pretty low. In contrast, if you go to places like sub-Saharan Africa, where the yield gap is very large, we're talking about a gap that is 80% of the potential, there is kind of easy to increase yields. I mean, the bad side is that in those countries where the best opportunities for increased yields are also the countries where there is less infrastructure, less access to inputs, and less access to knowledge and to extension services. So I want to conclude this talk by saying that linear models are the ones that really do a good job at describing yield trajectories. And in most cases, we found that the historical trends follow a linear trend, which means that the relative rate of increase has decreased over time. We also found, however, that in 44 of the 36 cases, which account for 31% of the global production, there were evidence of yield plateaus or decreases in the rate of yield gain. And perhaps more important, when we are trying to estimate future food security, it will always be a good idea to stay on the safety side and try to estimate it based on linear models with breakpoints or plateaus to reflect the linear nature of the crop yield gains in an ascending phase and the existence of a biophysical limit for grain yield. And finally, and going back to my first slide, approaches that rely on compound rates of yield increase or constant linear rates with no upper limit to yield growth are not supported by analysis of historical yield trends and current understanding of crop physiology, and they are likely to overestimate future increase in crop yields by a large margin and probably to distort our ability to effectively orient research and resources. And I want to end up with this quote from two great physiologists from Australia that says, "We cannot predict the discovery of the unknown, but we cannot afford expensive distractions." Thank you very much.